make any New Year's resolutions yet? A few of you, yes. A few nods. Uh-huh. So, Ted, I don't know if Ted's here. Yeah, Ted sent me a blog yesterday by Mariana Saver. I think I read it about 6 p.m. and decided to change the introduction because I liked it so much. And in it, she talks about the difference between setting a New Year's resolution and setting an intention, and really encourages us to go more the intention route. And I really, really liked that, because the resolution route, we know how that goes, right? I mean, you know, I'm not saying, you know, we will succeed, we will prevail. However, there are times when we set these resolutions that are really based more on what needs to be fixed, right? How we can fix ourselves. You know, we need to diet, or we need to get to the gym, or we need to, you know, those kinds of things. And if instead we change that to an intention, it's a much more loving, kinder, and ultimately more effective way to set out what it is that we want to accomplish. Because the idea basically is, once, you know, we eat the cupcake or the cookie and we're hard on ourselves, it sort of then starts this whole, like, icky feeling process that most of us don't want to go through, right? But if instead there's more of a gentle kind of, this is my general intention, and we're kinder with ourselves about that process, I think we generally will have much more success. Maybe think of it in this way. Instead of asking yourself, what do I need to improve about myself, ask, how could I reveal more of my divine self? It's quite a different feel, isn't it? Yeah, and it's so much more of that essence of us, that spiritual part of us that wants to come forth, that wants to be shared, that wants us to access it and share it. And so we get all of that support, too, from within and from those in our spiritual community who understand that kind of language. So thanks, Ted, for reshaping that for all of us this year with what you sent. So that insight, that shift can be monumental, and it can be really valuable in the long run, which reminds me of a story. In 1957, in Thailand, there was a need for a monastery to move because a road was going to be created right through the monastery. And so the monks were busy scurrying around, you know, trying to, you know, figure out how this was all going to work. And one of the things that was probably the most important thing to get moved in a gentle way was this Buddhist the statue of the Buddha that they cared about very much. And it was 2.5 tons. They didn't really know how heavy it was until they brought in a crane to move it, and it started to crack a little bit. So immediately they, of course, had the crane put it back down. And then, of course, as some of these things happen, one thing adds to the next, right? So as soon as that happened, it started to rain. So they've got it outside now, and so they're very carefully and lovingly putting tarps all over it and making sure it'll be safe through the night. And then they'll get more powerful equipment to come the next day so they can really move that with gentleness. In the middle of the night, the head monk is tossing and turning because he's thinking about, well, what if the rain is getting into that crack and it's damaging? And so he goes out with his flashlight to check and make sure all the tarps are okay. A surprising thing happens, though. As he's shining his light in the tarps toward the statue, a light shines back at him. And he thinks, huh, well, where is that coming from? And so he investigates a little bit more, and still this light keeps coming back. And he sees that it's coming from that place where the crack was. So his curiosity gets the best of him. He runs and gets a couple of tools, comes back with a chisel, and begins to chisel just a little bit more of that clay. And lo and behold, the more he chisels, the more of this sort of golden light seems to be coming back at him. He shines the light, there's more of it. So, of course, he gets really curious, and he starts to chisel a little more and a little more. Of course, the whole time probably holding his breath, right? Am I damaging the statue? Am I making it better? Not really sure what's going on here, what's hidden back here, but it sure feels like it's good, and it looks valuable. So by morning time, the other monks are waking up, and so much of the statue has been revealed, and they finish it off, and it is a solid gold Buddha. 2.5 tons of solid gold. And like about a decade or so ago, they said it was worth $200 million. It's probably worth more than that now. 10 feet tall. And so this valuable statue is there now, having been covered up with 12 inches of mud and clay. Now the backstory is that that was all done intentionally hundreds of years before. The situation then was that the Burmese army was invading what was then Siam, is now Thailand. And the monks at that time, at this monastery, knew that once the Burmese saw their golden Buddha, they would steal it. And so in order to save it, because the statue meant a lot more to them than it did the monetary worth, they put all this clay on it, 12 inches, in fact, of clay all the way around it. And just as predicted, the Burmese thought it was worthless and didn't pay any attention to that, but all of those monks were slaughtered. And so that secret lay dormant for all these hundreds of years until that monk shone that light in that crack. Now, why does this matter to us? I think you're probably going to catch on pretty quickly. Because that divine splendor in us, that truth that is in us, is always waiting there to be revealed. It's really what our journey is all about. In Lamentations, which this is always the one scripture that I pull from Lamentations, because Unity people like lamenting your lot, you know, Lamentations isn't really a scripture you probably will spend a lot of time with or a book. But this one scripture is really appropriate. It says, the precious sons of Zion, which we can understand is the sons and daughters, and Zion is Jerusalem, which always means metaphysically the spiritual center. So the precious sons and daughters at the spiritual center, it goes on to say, worth their weight in fine gold, worth their weight in fine gold, how they are regarded as earthen pots. And the scripture is really talking about how we regard ourselves, right? And how we regard each other. So often we forget that we are gold, that we are divine light, that we are made of this essence. And in our forgetting, there is all this covering up, right? Thinking we are just an earthen pot, not worth a lot. So it's important, I think, to begin with ourselves and our understanding of our own worthiness, especially as we begin a fresh new year and a fresh new decade. We sing every Sunday, Peace Begins With Me, for a reason, because when we get right with ourselves, when we get clear about what's the truth of us, it just naturally spreads out into our relationships and how we see one another and how we see the world around us. So if we are in a lot of self-judgment, then that tends to be the lens with which we will see the people in our lives and the world around us, right? So we want to clarify how we see ourselves. And when we think about all this mud, like in the story, all this mud, the mud came on for protection, right? Isn't it kind of the same with us? When we cover up our splendor and our light, it's not that we you know, instinctively want to do that. It's just that it feels safer. It feels like we need to protect ourselves for whatever reasons. Maybe it started in childhood, and maybe at that time it felt like a really good thing to do in that moment to self-protect. But then it becomes kind of a habit. And over time, like attracts like, and more mud comes on, whether it be self-judgment or criticism, or comparison, that thief of joy, Teddy Roosevelt called it. You know, whatever that is that begins to cover our light and cover our light and cover our light to the point where we don't even realize it's there anymore. We've forgotten our worth. And so it is opening it up. And so Brené Brown talked about this in one word, basically. Brené Brown is a researcher who's really a scholar on particularly vulnerability and shame. And so shame is the key word here. Shame is the word that most of us would rather say that we don't have that, or we don't want that, or we aren't, you know, we don't go there. And yet she says that it is one of these emotions that is primal, that is something that we do all feel. And on Oprah once, she said, shame is lethal. And we're swimming in it deep. And so it's about us. It's around us. It is something that we go to. It is one of those clumps of clay that tend to get put on. Now, it's important to distinguish the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is an emotion that is, I made a mistake, right? And often, hopefully, what follows that is, and I'll clean it up in some way, although it doesn't necessarily have to go that direction. Shame is more like, I'm the one who's flawed. It's me, myself, that is the mistake in some way. And so it's that deep falsehood about us that we want to root out and to let go. Brené says that shame lives in three ways. The three ways that we can flourish and feed it and keep it alive is through secrecy, silence, and judgment. And so what's key here then is to bring out into the light those core beliefs that are not true about ourselves. It's not that you have to broadcast it to the world. In fact, I wouldn't recommend that. But instead, maybe find somebody or you could, I guess you can do it in nature or just with spirit, but it's also helpful if you can find somebody who can hold that kind of empathy, who can really hold a kind of space that can hear you, that can really, and she says, shame can't survive empathy. And so in that space of empathy, shame just will fall away. And that very much like the shedding of the mud that has covered things up. So speaking it in a safe place, in a place of empathy, breaking the silence, and stopping the judgment. These are key ways that we can start to break away. And if you want to have an empathy circle, a place where you can share and have things held in a circle, you can join Veronica on Tuesday nights. She does that every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. They discuss topics that we're dealing with on Sunday mornings and in a very empathetic kind of space. So great place for you to do that. So this Buddha is covered in mud, right? Just like this experience that we're talking about. And it was created so long ago. You know, now it's irrelevant. Even in 1957, the reason why it was covered up was completely irrelevant. Generations and generations had passed. It's kind of the same with us. Something gets covered up or gets some core idea of ourselves that is not true, it gets in us, and we maybe somebody said it, but it takes us believing it in order to really take it in. And so maybe that was a long, long time ago, and it was, and now it's irrelevant, but we're still hanging on because it's habit or because we haven't looked yet. We haven't shined the light like that monk did, and seeing the light coming back at us, and by the way, seeing the cover-up as well for all that it is, because that's a part of it too. So sometimes we cover up for so long that we forget who we are, and this is a part of releasing and letting it go. And sometimes when we cover up the very best of us, you know, the heart of our hearts, the unique soul expression that we are, in addition to this divine essence that we're talking about. So how do we uncover it? How do we let it go? We really can go back to the story and see what happened in the story to uncover it. There was first a shift, right? The statue had to be moved in order for that crack to even happen. So there had to be some kind of shift. There was an actual movement of the statue itself, but also could be us moving with a new perspective, just a slightly different eye. Did you ever notice how different it can be if you just go up or down one stair? All of a sudden, I'm seeing you and maybe you're seeing me in a whole different way. And so changing our perspective, changing the places where we stand and look at ourselves can make a really big difference. So first it's a shift, and then it's a seeing, it's a looking. Ideally with spiritual eyes, who looked first? The head monk. And why the head monk? Because the highest part of us, the best part of us, will look and see with eyes that can both look at the ways, the painful ways that we've covered up and the shame that's there, and can also look at the gold, the essence, the beauty of who we are, and can hold both of those, and then can say, I want to pull forth more of that. I want to be more of that. Love or peace or joy or whatever it is You'll find a word later in our white stone ceremony that might mark exactly that which wants to be called forth for you from that golden space. So we see, we look from a higher place, and that helps start to break out that silence and that secrecy that Brené talked about shame, because we're looking now, we're shining a light. And then the third thing is to let go or subtract. You know, nothing had to be added to the Buddha to make it more valuable. Likewise, nothing needs to be added to us to make us more valuable. We don't need to add, we need to subtract, so that the splendor can be known and seen and experienced and felt. And so our subtracting might look like, after we have looked and seen, it might look like tears. It might look like that rainfall that came to wash away the mud, right? Because we recognize, oh, I see how I've treated myself. I see how I've judged myself. I see how I missed the course there, and it makes me feel sad. And so letting that come, letting the tears wash away, or maybe it'll be through ritual, and it may be through ritual as well, like the burning bowl we just did on New Year's Eve. Maybe there'll be a process for you. Maybe you want to do another one of those or one on your own where you write down what you want to release and burn it in the fire in a ceremonial and ritualistic way. There might be some other way that you come up with that is a shedding, that is a letting go. It might be dancing and movement that helps you just kind of shake off whatever it is that was there holding in a physical way these ideas about yourself that are not true. And so it's freeing ourselves, it's letting ourselves go, it's stopping the tendencies then to judge, changing the ways that we see ourselves. In John it says, "Beloved, if our hearts do not condemn us, we have boldness before God, and we receive from God whatever we ask." Let me say that again. Beloved, if our hearts do not condemn us, we have boldness before God, and we receive from God whatever we ask. And so if we stop condemning, there is a sense of the boldness of who we are begins to be revealed more and more. And then we can easily receive whatever we ask, because we don't have a foot of mud blocking the space to receive. We're just open, and we're free, and we are who we've come to be. And sometimes I think we're most afraid of that, right? Marianne Williams had said something likewise. It's our light, it's our brilliance that we're most afraid of, not our darkness so much. So sometimes we're afraid of what will be asked of us, or who will be now, or who will be beside us now, if our gold really shows, if our splendor is all out radiating in every direction. But fear not, because there's only good that can come from stepping into the truth of who you are more fully and more completely. Jesus put it about the greatest commandment, when he was asked, what is the greatest commandment? He put it forth as love, right? Love your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. See, there's almost an assumption in there, an automatic understanding that we love ourselves. Yet in the West, I think sometimes we struggle with this more than in the East. And so sometimes we love our neighbors more than we love ourselves, right? And so it is about understanding, about giving ourselves some of this, as it was sung in the meditation song, this sort of tenderness, a tender yes to who we are, a tender yes to all of it. Allowing of all of it and accepting of all of it. So we have shifted and seen and subtracted, and the last thing we could do to chase away the shame and the rest of the stuff that's in the way is to just shine. That's all there's left to do once all has been released, right? To just shine, to just be it, to be that radiance, to be that divinity, to be that truth. To allow yourself to be the unique soul expression that you are, because there is no one like you. I'm always astounded when I say that. I'm like, wow, we are all so unique. Although we all share this divine essence, this Christ nature, we also are all really unique in our expression, and how beautiful that is. I mean, 7 billion unique humans on the planet. that really have their own way of expressing. And when we try to emulate someone else or forget who we are or cover up who we are, that expression doesn't get shared with the universe. I mean, that's a real stingy thing that we would do in our lifetime, is to keep our good, to keep our gold hidden. And so if you can offer the greatest gift this decade, this year, let it be that, that your unique soul expression, your talents and gifts, your way of seeing and being in the world is freed. And you can allow that then to be honored by yourself, and therefore automatically it will be by others as you have the confidence to honor it yourself. So the four S's help us to shed. There's a lot of S's here today, shed and shaming, and then we get to shift and see and subtract and shine. So you received a stone as you came in, and some of you received a pen. We're going to need to share some of those pens if you don't mind. If you did not, would you raise your hand and we'll make sure our ushers bring you a stone, and if there are any pens left, they'll bring you a pen. Otherwise, we'll just have to love our neighbor and share with our neighbor. So for those of you who are just joining this ritual, this is always a ritual that we do on the first Sunday of the year. And you don't, some of you who know the ritual, probably or possibly some of you, maybe just one or two of you, have come with a preordained word in your mind. So I want to just really encourage you to let that go. It may come back, but let's let spirit be in charge. So there's going to be a process and a ceremony that we'll take you through here, a meditation and some music and so on. So you can just, you don't need to have this right at, you can have your stone and your pen nearby, but you don't need to have it right at the ready. I want to give you a little bit of background for the ceremony. In Jesus' time, when a prisoner was freed, during the Roman times, when a prisoner was freed, they were given a stone, a white stone, and it was to represent their freedom. And so this year, I want to encourage you to allow it to both represent your freedom and also your worth. Let this stone be a symbol of your worth, the stone itself, to remind you of your purity, of your truth, of your light. And so the stone also comes, and the ceremony also comes from a scriptural background from Revelation 2:17. And it says, let anyone who has an ear listen to what Spirit has to say to the churches. To everyone who conquers, in other words, overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna, and I will give them a white stone. And on the white stone is written a new name that no one knows except the one who receives it. And so it's from this idea that we are given this white stone, a symbol of freedom, a new name that will be written upon it, or a spiritual quality that you'll hold throughout the year. Probably one word, but sometimes two words will come. Usually it's one word. So I want to encourage you as we move into the time of meditation to really allow spirit to bring it forth, and to really listen from within, to really let yourself get from the mind, drop down that, I know it seems like a long journey, but it's only 18 inches to the heart. And to really breathe into the heart and to really tap spirit's energy, and I'll guide you through the process. And then also to trust whatever comes. Sometimes a word will come. Somebody was just sharing with me at the 9:30 that they got endure last year, and they didn't really like that word and didn't really want that word. One year I got sever. I didn't really want that word, didn't really like that word, but it turned out that it was a brilliant word I saw as time went on during the year. So just allow yourself to trust what comes, because what comes is coming from God, and it is your ordained word and your trajectory for the year that will continue to guide you, and it will make sense in time if it doesn't make sense in the moment. So without further ado, I want to give us a moment to just begin to rest in the presence. And to close your eyes if you wish, and to breathe into your heart space. Just to relax and receive the song to begin. Hold that stone in your hand and just beginning to feel the energy that moves from your heart down your arm through your hand chakra to that hand, to that stone. And from heart to hand, it's almost as if a word will write itself. Your spirit will give it to you directly. This is your spiritual quality to be throughout the year. You are this word. You will become it as it comes clear. Whenever you're ready, I invite you to write the word that comes on your stone. Don't force it, give it time. And don't second guess it. If something comes, that's your word.
Today as I stand open, I want to encourage you to keep this word sacred. So that may be keeping it to yourself initially or not. It depends on what feels right for you. But just allowing this to really be a talisman for your year. Maybe keep it somewhere, the stone itself, on an altar or in your car or on your desk. Whatever works for you that you'll see it a lot in your pocket, in your purse. Whatever is your habit for seeing this a lot and being reminded over and over again. That this is my focus. This is who I am. This is who I've come to be. This is who I am in 2020. I love that it's 2020 now, right? We've got 2020 vision. It is with those spiritual eyes that we're really seeing ourselves, our future, one another, our world, the peace that we want in our world, the harmony that we want in our world. I know that's on our hearts today. And just really sending that out. Not focusing on what we don't want, not focusing on the fear, not adding any more mud, but instead remember the splendor, the golden essence of who we all are, and let's call that forth for our world. That is paved with peace. That is paved with harmony and understanding and humanity as one human family that reveres all life. And so let's know that together, and also let's invite our children to come join us for a special ending. So if you aren't yet feeling your full worth, I wanted to share with you a story that might help it along to remind you of the night you were born. Anybody, any of you kids ever see this story, On the Night You Were Born by Nancy Tillman? No? Okay, great. Well, I hope you will enjoy it. It's for big kids and little kids. So on the night you were born, on the night you were born, the moon smiled with such wonder that the stars peeked in to see you, and the night wind whispered, "Life will never be the same," because there had never been anyone like you ever in the world. Isn't that amazing? So enchanted with you were the wind and the rain that they whispered the sound of your wonderful name. The sound of your name is a magical one. Let's say it aloud before we go on. Kristen. Oh, come on, Eddie. Let's try it one more time. Let's all say our name at the same time. Oh, that felt good. It sailed through the farmland, high on a breeze, over the ocean, and through the trees. Until everyone heard it, and everyone knew of the one and only ever you. Not once had there been such eyes, such a nose, such silly, wiggly, wonderful toes. In fact, I think I'll count to three so you can wiggle your toes for me. One, two, three. Good thing to do every so often. Know we're alive, right? When the polar bears heard, they danced until dawn. From faraway places, the geese flew home. The moon stayed up until morning next day. And none of the ladybugs flew away. So whenever you doubt just how special you are, and you wonder who loves you, how much, and how far, listen for the geese honking high in the sky. They're singing a song to remember you by. Did you know that was happening when the geese honk over ahead? Let's all remember it. Or notice the bears asleep at the zoo. It's because they've been dancing all night for you. Or drift off to sleep to the sound of the wind. Listen closely. It's whispering your name again. If the moon stays up until morning one day, or a ladybug lands and decides to stay, or a little bird sits at your window a while, it's because they're all hoping to see you smile. For never before, in story or rhyme, not even once upon a time, has the world ever known you, AU, my friend, and it never will, not ever again. Heaven blew every trumpet and played every horn on the wonderful, marvelous night you were born. And just in case you didn't get the message, the last one says, you are loved. So let's take it all together, everywhere we've traveled this morning, and bring it all home with the idea that we are claiming our birthright, we are claiming our worthiness, and we are speaking our new word, our new spiritual quality. Now, you can speak that in your heart or speak it out loud, whichever works for you. So let's say this together as we own these truths about ourselves. Ready? Together? Today, I claim my divine birthright. I am worthy beyond measure. I am. So it is.